want to ask me, the president is asking me to go and attend to. He has asked me to be the chair of this session. Well, I will be the chair not for a few hours. I hope we'll work together harmoniously. My job is very easy. It is just to drive this vehicle. We have a few people to present today. If everything goes well, we will be through by 10. That's the latest for 10 seconds. Now, without a waste of time, let me declare this meeting open. Our first presenter will be...
I'd just like to make a point. How many members of the committee are present? I know Dr. Rabe and myself, the 58 members are here.
Yeah,
how many others are here?
Yeah,
who are the other two? Do we have it's an important matter, and the committee is off desolate, and people have come from different parts of the country to make presentations.
Five even yesterday, but we continued. So the issue of numbers won't delay us now. Let's continue and listen to the three presenters. The documents are here. Other members will join us when we look at all the documents together as a committee. Can we agree to do that?
I'm not asking for a postponement.
I think they are coming. The road is packed, Mr. Lanskapi. I left home at half past 6, but I arrived here very late at 8 because of the traffic that is so congested. Can you agree that we start so that we finish this?
Agreed.
Thank you very much. Our first presenter will be near 10. Since we are starting at 9:20. I hope it will be very short. Let's all listen to him and we'll get our time to ask questions. Over to you.
Morning, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Denzel Bowman, and I'm here in this Olga House representing the views of NeoTel. Chairperson, my comments would be short and would speak to the written submission which we submitted to this committee. Our focus, Chairperson, would be on the application of the Act, Section 43B, Subsection 1, 43B, Sub 2, 43C, Sub 1, and in Section 7 of the bill. Chairperson, from the onset, let me say that NeoTel supports the principal objectives contained in this bill, but there are just some areas where clarity is required to ensure that good legislation and for fraternity. In return to the application of the Act, NeoTel supports the principle as stipulated in Section 3, Sub 3B, that states that the manner by which any concurrent jurisdiction contemplated in paragraph A is to be exercised must be determined by an agreement between the Competition Commission and other regulatory authorities as provided for. We support this, Chairperson, because the current MOU or MOA between the Council and the Competition Commission has set a good foundation for which the two organizations can work together. Better means by which their concurrent jurisdictional relationships can be worked out will evolve as they implement the MOU or MOA more and more. The MOU sets out how the ICASA and the Competition Commission will work together and handle disputes where they each have concurrent jurisdiction. The MOU will set out how and what type of complaints they will manage. With regards to Section 43B Sub 1, initiating market inquiries. With regards to this section, Chairperson, clarity is sought as to how the Commission will undertake a market inquiry in conjunction with an industry-specific regulator. The question asks, will ICASA and the Commission revise the MOU or MOA to set out how they will jointly undertake market inquiries? The MOU that's currently in place is silent on the joint undertaking of market inquiries. With regards to Section 43, B, Chairperson, again, clarity is sought as to what will happen if the Commission inquiry runs in parallel with another regulated market inquiry. What are the implications and outcome of this process? Will the Commission and the other regulators be compelled to conduct the inquiry concurrently? How will differences in approach and in findings be managed? Also, if there are differences in findings, which findings will take precedence in the event of a difference or in conflicting findings? Also, if the public comments result in material change to the inquiry, how will these be factored into the inquiry? And how will this change the timing of the inquiry, Chairperson? These are the concerns that we need clarity on where the bill is silent. Then we turn to Section 43C1, the outcome of the inquiry. Chairperson, we pose the question, should this not be managed before the Competition Commission to give their report on the inquiry to the Minister? Newton is of the view, Chairperson, that if the Minister is to be responsible for policy formulation in relation to competition matters, then the Minister should have knowledge of the outcomes of inquiries undertaken by the Commission so as to develop more informed policies. We believe, Chairperson, that good practice makes for good policy. We turn to Section 7 of the Amendment Bill, which seeks to amend Section 49B of the Competition Act. Chairperson, opposition here is that Neotel is just wondering whether this should not be limited to people of local standing. Perhaps limiting the base of comments to individuals with local standing will enable the Commission to receive and evaluate more informed submissions. And then in conclusion, Chairperson, Neotel wishes to thank the Portfolio Committee for the opportunity to have presented on the bill and hope that its comments will help to strengthen the legislation and achieve its objectives. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much.
Just wanted to understand the very last slide of we talked about Section 7 of the Amendment Bill. It is said it should be limited to people of local standing. If that could be unpacked for me, but what does that actually convey?
Thank you, Mr. Market. Our position is that we want these people that approach the Commission to not be anybody that's got a gripe against anybody. It should be of course you might have the one people that has the mental capacity to appear before a sort of a court. Although we're not really married to this idea, Chairperson, we're just wondering whether it should not be in the book. We don't have an idea, Chairperson. We were just wondering. Like I said, we're not really married to the idea of it being in the book.
After looking at it, Sarah, you can know that this is on how we can discuss
that. We'll definitely do that, Chairperson. Speak to our legal people and come up with a formulation that we can get to the committee.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kathy. We take your position on board, and we'll take that into consideration together with the request from the chairperson when we speak to our legal people and their functions to be able to do the committee.
His first name was last name, or his nickname?
Well, that's what they call him.
Snakes.
What's his surname?
His name is
Anoka.
Anoka, okay.
It's a common name. I suggest to you that you should
be doing it. He doesn't mind if they call him.
Yeah.
I don't
is a submission, Madam Chairperson,
that this motion might be in conflict with the definition of black person as contained in the purpose. The Broadband Black Empowerment Act. Vodacom would therefore suggest that the terminology SDP or historical disadvantaged person in the bill and black person as set out in the purple B as master mark. Alternatively, a historically disadvantaged person in the bill should be deleted and replaced with the time black person as set out in the purple B act. As for the application of the act, Vodacom supports the policy rationale behind the amendment of Section 3 of the Competition Act. The new Section 3, however, is problematic and could have unforeseen problems because it could be construed to be suggested that the Competition Act trumps all other legislation. And indeed, from a point of view, we think that it could be unworkable in the context of such a specific legislation, such as the Electronic Communications Act of 2005, which requires competitors in the context of the communication sector to negotiate tariffs for interconnection purposes, conduct which can easily be construed as unsigned competitive under the being under consideration by this August power. We therefore suggest that Parliament must ensure that there is harmony between Section 3 of the deal and other sets of specific legislation, primary and subordinate, such as the Electronic Communications Act. And we should also strengthen concurrent jurisdiction provisions of the deal so that the benefits accruing to the economy as a consequence of efforts of other regulators with mandate may be different from that of the Competition Commission and not undermined. Vodacom submits that the amendment to Section 3 of the Competition Act must be coupled with a review of the Memorandum of Understanding between the Competition Commission and the Independent Communications Authority of South Africa. The new MOU between ICASA and the Competition Commission, between ICASA and the Competition Commission, must in our view clarify the coordination of activities and jurisdiction and the scope of provision of the ECA dealing with ex ante and ex post competition management. Monitoring, investigation, and associated penalties, that's what market reviews and imposition of remedies to correct market failure. Vodacom proposes in the context of the CASA Competition Commission MAU that the jurisdiction of the Commission should cover the ex post facto contract and not extend to ex ante intervention in the communication sector. The ECA in this regard want to point out Chairperson a comprehensive rules and remedies for managing ex ante anti-comparative behavior. With respect to complex monopolies, we want to place on record that Section 4 of the deal provides for the insertion of the new Section 10A of the Competition Act. Respect to this proposal, a complex monopoly exists within a market for any particular goods and services, if at least 45% of goods or services in that market are supplied by two or more firms, and the firms conduct their respective business affairs in a coordinated manner, either with or thought argument between or among themselves, or as a contested practice. Section 10(3) provides that the participation of a firm in a complex monopoly is prohibited if the complex monopoly has the impact of substantially preventing or lessening competition. And much as which a complex monopoly is characterized by a restriction on supply and lack of innovation, exploitative pricing, exclusionary acts, higher entry barriers, and uniform pricing, similar trading conditions, or other indicators of parallel conscious conduct. Vodacom questions the rationality behind the introduction of the concept of complex monopoly in the deal, and Vodacom proposed that the concept of complex monopoly should be defined for the following reasons. Market share threshold for complex monopoly is overly broad to cover any type of market in a concentrated or not. The provision of complex monopolies in the deal builds the structure, not the conduct of the act. The concept of complex monopoly proposed applies in the case of legal doctrine, i.e. the rule of law dictates that any person must have the owning of any law which may affect his or her rights in fear and preservation. The language of section 10A gives rise to legal uncertainty, and firms may find it difficult to structure their conduct to avoid the prohibition in section 10A because no requirement that firms should be aware that they are participants in a complex monopoly and consented to such a participation. Funds cannot predict in advance whether the market they operate in is characterized by the effect of listed in section 18, particularly where these characteristics may advance from the conduct of other firms of which they may not be aware. The complex monopoly concept is foreign to and not supported by other competition law jurisdictions around the world. The introduction of this concept in our law, therefore, is out of line international best practice. The concept of complex monopoly is not found in European, Canadian, Australian, or U.S. jurisdiction. And the repeal of certain provisions in the UK Fair Trading Act of 1973 has resulted in the abolition of this concept in the UK under the Enterprise Act of 2002. As for the criminalization of the conduct of directors and managers under Section 73A, Vodacom would want to support the new position of sanctions from direct all persons engaged by a firm in positions of authority. Vodacom takes the view that the criteria set out in Section 73A(2) of the deal allows for a conviction on a lesser standard of culpability. Section 73A(2)(b) of the deal introduced a negligent standard test which attempts to conduct that is not sufficiently or adequately blameworthy. Vodacom proposes that Section 73A(2)(b) should be deleted in its entirety. To conclude Chapter 2, I just want to highlight the central theme of our presentation. Vodacom proposes that Parliament should consider that the jurisdiction of the Competition Commission should only apply in respect of methods of ex post as opposed to ex ante regulation. The framework of the Electronic Communications Act is comprehensive in dealing with the detection and damage for
anti-comparative behavior on an aspect until that the concept of complex monopoly should be defined in its entirety. Section 7 to 8 of the deal, which is a negligent conduct class, which is kind of conduct that is not adequately blameworthy and should be deleted. And I want to take this opportunity to thank Parliament for having afforded Vodafone the opportunity to make this presentation, but also to draw the attention of Parliament to the fact that it appears that even the Competition Committee and the Competition Tribunal have issues with the deal that is in the case, and I think from the perspective of Parliament as a policymaker, the fundamental issue becomes if the institution, by the Competition Committee and Competition Tribunal, which are going to be seized with the responsibility of implementing the bill, has an issue with the bill that has been put on the table. The fundamental question is whether this bill or proposed changes would ever be good law or bad law. Thank you very much, President. And I think I'm ready to take questions, and my colleagues will introduce a given assistance and the environment.
Thank you very much, sir.
Page 12.
persons cannot predict in advance whether the market they operate in is characterized by the factors listed in section 10A2. I think, I'm believing here that there's a possibility that you get an uncompetitive outcome caused by the market itself, not by any behavior by anybody. And I think those also must be investigated. And maybe if we take that to cover that area, that is my understanding, or I don't see anything wrong with that, because it allows the commission to investigate even if nobody was wrong, according to that. And I see here we keep on saying, page 13, that this is what the Europeans do, this is what the Canadians, Australians. My view that we are not in Europe here. We always say we are a developmental state, which is definitely different from what the Europeans do. Do we necessarily have to follow what the Europeans do, even if our economies are different, our expectations are different? Never heard anybody comparing what they do in Egypt or in Burundi. Not that it's necessary, but can you explain why we should follow these people if we are not in... our economies are different. Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Telecommunications and the communication
industry as it were. And to point out to the House and the situation concerned, there is a memorandum of understanding which was signed in 2022 that subsists between the Competition Commission on the one hand and the ICASA on the other. When we're analyzing the piece of legislation, it does appear to be the intention of and the author of this legislation at some point or the other what they foresee in a situation where there will be conflict between what the country is trying to do and the Competition Commissioner, especially with respect to those aspects of the country who have is that the CAPTRA as a regulatory body deals with issues that are peculiar to telecommunications or communication sector as it were, and that those issues might not be necessarily be addressed effectively in the context of a regulatory authority that has to focus on competition concerns generically. And really our submission is that in considering this thing, you ought to take into account the realities that they have today and not create a situation where other policies or public policy objectives and the government wants to achieve for the instrumentality of other regulators are undermined because the transfer stands the powers of the Competition Commission. So effectively saying, take into account those realities, make sure that you do not undermine the status quo unnecessarily.
Are you saying to us that the memorandum of understanding that was signed, it appears to exist at once? The functional handling of this particular business class that is. And if yes, what is it that you suggest? You suggest that the business is left at ease of the amended in a particular way, and if yes, what way?
Chairperson, what we are suggesting is that if the business class is what it would do, it is very matters of competition that affect the communications environment might be trumped by what the competition is about. And in that context, the committee that we either do the state of the law and see our basic recognition of that we certain questions and deal with certain questions that we can the other concern, which was raised just at this, relates to the fact that the quality of experience has been underestimated. And I think part of the question is why people point to example to the developed world when we are an emerging economy. I mean, the reality is we all existing and living in the global village. And I would argue that the fact that the notion of complex economy is finding its way into the streets of legislation is because BGI has done some extensive research on it and felt that it's appropriate to our law and situation in South Africa. And what we are submitting is that one, it's not appropriate. Secondly, if the notion is emerging from markets such as the UK,
properly. and the economy as a whole benefit as a result of that, because if entrance to areas were created as a result of that, those entrance areas are more limited and the economy is better off. What happens is, if you then put the Competition Commission and render the ECF provision and the Qatar Act irrelevant, then the Competition Commission will have to find a way of putting those rules in place, which we don't think they have the happiness to do. So rather, it is better to strengthen that cooperation between them, because one, I expect technical. Others are experts in competition network. And the combined effort can help to deal with all those issues. Because CAFE is supposed to map out those rules for those problems, okay? Not after.
If I can maybe add, it's not because also from Vodacom. You think of the question on the memorandum of agreement and the strengthening of the way that they work together. I do believe in terms of the EC Act, the provision is made for the Competition Commission and our industry regulators because we actually work together. And it is very important that they actually do so. It might be relevant because of the fact that the memorandum of agreement was drafted under the Telecommunications Act to revisit the memorandum of agreement to see whether it is still sufficiently catering for the way that they work together in terms of the EC Act. However, as Professor Kimioka has indicated, that it is very important that the Competition Commission has good understanding and good relationship with our industry regulator in the following sense. The EC Act or the Electronic Communications Act has got different policy objectives than that the Competition Act may have. And therefore, there might be different requirements on the telecommunications industry than what than things that matters that the Competition Commission will look at. For instance, just an example. In terms of the Electronic Communications Act, the operators are required to actually come to an agreement with respect of interconnection rights for mobile termination as something you have referred to. And that is something that might look like collusion in terms of the Competition Act, because any agreement between parties in respect of prices might appear to be collusion in terms of the Competition Act. Therefore, I think what you are arguing is that when there is matters that is regulated in terms of the Electronic Communications Act by CASA, it is very important that on such matters, when the Competition Commission wants to look at competition aspects on those matters, that they work very closely together with the industry regulator, because I think otherwise they might not have the necessary understanding of how these things are regulated and how the industry actually functions on those areas. And that would apply to issues such as interconnection, on issues such as facility leasing, and on any other issue that might be regulated from the authorities' perspective on an ex ante basis. And then on its respect of the matter with regard to following Europe and this and other jurisdictions, I do think it's important that we look at other jurisdictions, because you can always learn from them. And I think because of the fact that competition in the telecommunication industry is well developed, and even if you also look at the submission that was made by the Law Society yesterday, that also strongly indicated that they would advise against South Africa implementing a concept into the South African competition law that has been found not to work and not to be efficient in other countries.
I think that
question was that in certain instances, a possibility that, we could get anti-competitive outcome in the market without being able to point to a fact on the future. Also, just in that regard, is that that does not require us to introduce the concept of complex monopoly. What we could do is do a market review and try and understand what is the market favor and deal with it.
Can I just add to that? It came with regard to the sound factors that you listed, and where it says that firms cannot be in advance with the factors listed that they actually comply with it. It is basically the fact is that what it means is that the company must be part and guilty of being part of a complex monopoly without the actual knowledge that they're actually participating in it. And it is a very bad situation for companies to be in if they cannot predict that what they are doing might be in contravention of the Competition Act, and they might find themselves falling foul of this conflict without ever having the intention to participate in such a complex monopoly. And that is not the law. It's basically very difficult for any company to plan and to know what to do at certain times.
Contradicting yourself because you're saying that the Competition Act trumps all other legislation, and then later you're saying that we need to harmonize between those two legislations. So I think one needs to get that clarity on your side as well. I think the other thing that maybe I would want to just say, you have asked for the deletion of Section 73A2B. Perhaps if you can very briefly just tell us, because I'm not sufficiently convinced why we should delete.
The reason why we've asked for a deletion of that section is because it's based on intuitive knowledge, not actual knowledge of the director, which means that there's a possibility of having a conviction where there is no liability inside. And for the fact that the evidence on which the conviction is based is from a competition maker where the director is not involved to actually defend itself, we find it problematic, and that's the reason.
That's not
I'm listening to Vodacom. I suppose it really boils down to, if it wasn't for the cover that the CASA regulations give you, you and the other two cell phone companies would be guilty of cartel, monopoly, price fixing, and everything under the sun, because that's your pig leaf. That's covering you. As far as the question of law, it's easy to say complex monopoly is not found in Europe, Canada, Australia. Because in those countries you have open competition. Yeah, you people are protected. You know? And I won't even, we'll deal with the question of your cell phone contracts when we come to the Consumer Protection Act. We'll get to there. But the question of intuitive knowledge, I think. The fact is,
I think
the
we will not get them because you are telling them on Facebook. Oh, are you sure? Okay, thank you.
So, I think there's a few issues to deal with. Where we request that the provider and the foundation to listen to you, but just to correct the point that we not suggesting that the Competition Act trumps all other legislation. We're saying the way the new section 3 of the amendment deals from data will be confused to suggesting that the Competition Act trumps all other legislation, i.e., what Joe Kassaman did, the Telecommunications Act, to the question that we try to use for the life of the Kasa, because it provides, we need to provide protection when we don't necessarily agree with us, you don't think it has to provide any form of cover for us. If anything, in a proactive way, they have initiated a number of inquiries that are aimed at regulating our interconnection rates, introducing new subsidies, trying to abolish transfer subsidies. So, in a material way, rather than looking at the problem of competition in a reactionary way, they're doing it in a proactive way. But as members of parliament should appreciate, as an industry, as a sector, one wouldn't want to be subjected to a situation where the CASA initiate an investigation on one issue, completely comes with the finding, then the Competition Commission does the same. And therefore, the reason, or rationale for argument, that, you know, there is a need for there to be a robust memorandum of understanding between the two regulatory authorities, and fundamentally those same questions that the Competition Act or the current amendment to the Competition Act basically takes into account what is provided for in the Electronic Communications Act. Otherwise, we find ourselves in a situation where we accountable to multiple authorities when through the memorandum of understanding the two authorities can come to some understanding which will provide greater clarity and greater certainty to our sector with respect to the regulation of both ex ante and ex post facto competition matters.
Thank you very much, sir. I think we have exhausted all the questions. Thank you very much. We're moving very slow, but let's go to our last presenter.
Thank you.
Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Member, and the guests present in the house, thank you for this opportunity to present to you on this important matter. My name is Robert Nkula, I'm a counselor at ICASA. With me is Councillor Thabo Mahase, the General Manager for Market and Competition Institute, the General Manager for Legal Affairs, then Mamari Khan, and Thabo Sangu from our Market and Competition Institution. Before I start with our presentation, I just want to make a quick observation. In fact, to suggest principles that must drive this engagement. First, we want to suggest that the amendment process should seek to clarify rules as opposed to suggesting which role is given to the other. That would be a point of departure as far as we are concerned. Secondly, Chairperson, we want to suggest that this exercise should serve to narrow the opportunity for forum shooting as opposed to widening it as things become referred. We have already discussed this matter with the DCI that it is very important that the outcome of this process should be to narrow the opportunity for forum shooting as opposed to widening it. And to understand some of the suggestions in the draft amendment points to that direction. Now, in terms of the actual issues at the end, we want to suggest as it has that there should be a clear delineation between ex ante and ex post. We have also raised this matter with you the DCI. Now, as has been stated by other presenters, the electronic communication has allowed the CASA to set the rules of the game. That is what we mean by ex ante. But then, in the exercise of our ex ante responsibility, we also have to enforce compliance. And this point should be made very clear, because in the enforcement of compliance on the face of it appears like an ex post responsibility. Let's take, for example, a situation where the CASA imposes a limit related to interconnection. It would be inconceivable to suggest that the CASA must set the rules and impose such limits, but the enforcement must be done by the Competition Commission. So we suggested to the DCI that in the definition of ex ante, it should be made clear that insofar as the CASA regulators are concerned, that includes the enforcement of compliance. I think that's what we have been saying that should be made clear in the final analysis. On the face of it, it will seem like the ECA and the Competition Act do not clearly outline those responsibilities to say that the regulators will deal with the ex ante, which includes the compliance issues, and the Competition Commission will deal with any other matter related to competition that is not covered in the special legislation. So any other matter of competition nature that is not included in the special legislation will have to be dealt with by the Competition Commission. So that the role of the special regulator is confined to matters that are outlined in the relevant legislation. And we believe that if we understand the two legislations in context, there should be no problem. Because our role as it has is hard for us insofar as it's outlined in the legislation. And we've already stated that the only such matters which are not outlined in our legislation can be dealt with by the Competition Commission. The thing I'm saying very quickly, historically as it has been indicated, a kind of involvement in competition matters was very limited in terms of the old telecommunications. But today, fast forward to the new dispensation, the role of the CASA has become wider and more pronounced, and we're blessed with this matter with the DPI, and I think we are agreeing on this. So, as a result of proposed, but instead of reading these two laws in isolation, they should be read as being mutually reinforcing, because it's measuring a weight, as opposed to being in an anti-species to each other. Chairperson, very quickly, I've already dealt with the issue of the new role of the carbon tax of the ECA. You see, Chairperson, when you look at the ECA, on the face of it, it may appear like the ICASA is giving industry advantage. Let me indicate that the ECA is a fairly new legislation, and we're in the process of implementing the ECA. So, as we commence with implementation, initially it may seem like ICASA has got no tools or tools. But as we go about with the implementation of Chapter 10, it will then arise that ICASA indeed has to deal with competition methods in the industry. So, ordinarily, in the short term, it may appear like there is a vacuum. But there is the, we are doing everything to close that vacuum in terms of the provisions of we've already indicated that our understanding of our ex-post responsibility is only confined to enforcement, monitoring, and ensuring that there is compliance. So we're saying that the authority should be vested with exclusive ex-ante regulatory powers as contained in Section 374 of the ECA, and that the Competition Act and the Competition Authorities should be vested with ex-post competition regulation power. Let me emphasize that these ex-post competition regulator powers are those outside what we're doing in terms of the ECA, because that is at the heart of the discourse that we have. Madam Chair, very quickly, we have already indicated to the competition, not to the Department of Trade and Industry, that we will initiate a discussion with the Department of Communications to see how Section 67, 1 to 3, which deals with undue preference, should be dealt with to the extent that it's necessary. We may propose that the Electronic Communications Act be amended accordingly to ensure that there is seamless complementarity between the two legislations. In terms of Section 67, but also one issue that has been raised by the BCI. Let me refresh members. Section 67.9 of the ECA states, subject to the provisions of this Act, the Competition Act applies competition matters in the electronic communications industry. If I can repeat, subject to the provisions of this Act, the Competition Act applies to competition matters in the electronic communications industry. In our engagement with the BCI, we discern that there could be various interpretations of what this means. And it would seem like, as far as colleagues at BCI are concerned, this means that electronic communications is a no-go area for the competition authority. On the face of it, when you read that statement, it may suggest that that's what it means. Whereas from ICASA's reading, it means something different. All it means to us is that the development of the rules and the enforcement of the rules will decide in time. So, which means that when the competition authorities come to in our domain, they will appreciate the fact that the rule setting and the enforcement of rules is done by this time. And any other matter that is not covered in the ECA will be dealt with by the competition commission. However, if this conclusion persists, notwithstanding our clarification, we are prepared to go to find an amicable way of waiting of that chapter. And I think the last meeting which we had with the BCI and the Department of Communications, all parties were beginning to warm to that possibility. That it means we have to consider the amendment in the ECA. We, as the authority, we do not feel comfortable with the Section 3 of the current draft, the way it's written, because it seems to be saying, you see, it seems to be persistent in saying that one legislation should be above the other legislation. And as we indicated in our opening session, that should not be the spirit of this discussion. It's not about the superiority or inferiority of any other legislation, but how the two can work in together. Now, the provision in the Constitution Amendment Bill regarding the conflict of consistency, as indicated, should be removed or replaced with an alternative provision that makes a clear distinction between the roles of the regulators, rather than attempting to establish the superiority of one above the other. We have made our submission to the DTI, and I have been slightly informed that our submission was given to honorable members in the course of the yesterday. So our actual submission, our draft with regard to this section, has already been submitted to the DTI and discussed with the DOC and to the Fed Complex Skills Commission. So in brief, this would be our submission. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, still question.
Thank you very much. Can we take questions? I see Honorable Benson of M.
I have a loud voice, so I hope it's okay. Yes, I think that Parliament would want to avoid turf wars as much as possible. In the end, I agree the legislation must be very clear where authority and jurisdiction lies, but before we pass legislation, there should be negotiation over turf wars. It's not a pleasant terrain that we want to get into, so I certainly would hope that these things can be sorted out between yourselves and the department and so on. But I'd like to ask you a question. When the Law Society came to us and made a presentation, the question was raised, what is the difference between pollution and what they called rational commercial behavior? Now, insofar as you exercise your judgment, how do you understand these terms? Pollution on the one hand, which is, as they said, unacceptable, and rational commercial behavior, which is acceptable. Now, I personally am not sure if I know the difference between the two, and I wonder if anyone from either ICASA or anybody else can enlighten us, because we need to understand the fundamental issues that we're dealing with. The fundamental issues, not this clause, that clause, of course that's important. But what are we really talking about when we talk about competition and what is allowable and what is not? If you can help us, anybody else, that'd be great.
Thank you, my question is around the location of the function of addressing competition in our economy. For business activities, these are the role of regulators. If you could help me, Babanguna, to recap that, because you said it at the end, but I wasn't seeing the question. I understand, without putting any judgment to your presentation, that you're referring in particular to how ICASA should relate to the Competition Commission vis-à-vis the current amendment. But the question, what triggers, a further question in my mind is that there are a number of regulators who probably, one or another, could bump across, the very problems around which the Competition Commission is mandated to address. Now,
my understanding was that the Competition Commission is therefore mandated to address, you know, anti-competitive behavior across the economy. Now, it may not be a call, but I'm just provoking you to say, are you exactly, how do you think we then should restructure the mandate of the Competition Commission? Because at the end of the day, the amendment implies that restructuring, you know, the mandate so that it becomes more effective, particularly that it may happen, that's a probability that down the line there may be another regulator which may experience the same economic experience. Do you see it as something that the current black owner, using your language, the legal language, has just been located within ICASA only, or is there a probability that could go to us to other regulators as well? Sorry to ask the same thing in the present.
I think that's useful. I'll just deal with the two questions, and Keith is going to deal with the question asked by Honorable Member in terms of the PEP one, let me indicate that from the ICASA's perspective, we have been sitting in meetings with the DTI, the Department of Communications, and for the Fed, the Competition Commission. And as far as we understand, we all agree, and the colleagues from DTI will confirm this when they reply to our presentation, that we have the some agreement in terms of who should do what. I think what we are doing now is to come to the detail, the actual drafting, that's what we have seen. And I can speak without the nature of contradiction that when the DTI responds to the submission, they will indicate that there has been cordiality in the discussions that we have had with them. And they understand where we are coming from in terms of our understanding of our role and how the two should work together. We also suggested in our discussion with the DTI that it is better the law clarifies the responsibility as opposed to leaving that to a memorandum of understanding. So it should be legislation that defends the respective responsibility. But by the time we commence to negotiate the MOU, already we have enough in substance by way of legislation to resolve the issue. And this also goes to what the Honorable Member Ziggler was saying, that the issue of competition would seem is diffused spread across what the government they would call the economic cluster. One way or another, it would seem that the different components of the economic cluster in government, one way or another, deal with the certain regulatory issues. I mean, yesterday you had NESA presenting, but they also deal with certain competition issues. So when you look at it, the function of competition regulation is different. And it's divided between what central regulators do, which is ex ante, including enforcement, monitoring, and compliance measures, and the overarching competition issue, which reside outside the legislation that governs in sector regulation. So that is how it's currently structured. And I hope maybe what you wanted to argue, which is a very valid point, is that to an extent possible, there should be effective coordination, you know, and engagement between the different regulators within the country. And I think from our side of things, we would be prepared to participate in any forum that brings all the regulators in that is necessary to ensure that there is convergence leaning from each other and so forth. So we can look at that. Lastly, the issue of the MOU as it has been raised here, our understanding, the current MOU will have to be renegotiated because on our side of things, the existing MOU was negotiated under a different legislative environment during the period of the telecommunications. Now, fast forward to the ECB. The role of the Catalan Court issue that has become more pronounced as it was before. So when we renegotiate the MOU, we will suggest that we will take into account the change in context. We remain to say that for us, the issues are very clear, what we have to do and what the Competition Commission has to do. And let me allow Keith to quickly deal with the question after the honorable member.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My understanding of the Law Society's comments yesterday, I think they were referring to unconscious parallel crime followers. Now, I mean, the difference for me is it's a question of collusion, it's really a question of proof. Is there an agreement where there's this text that establishes the meeting of the minds that would show a conspiracy to stick prices, as opposed to a situation that arises certain markets that have certain structural problems, if you like, where rational parallel conduct produces price following behavior. So I think the first thing to note is, if that happens, this is not just an agreement that the provisions under Section 4 that can't be applied quite easily to that problem, but that rational parallel, conduct produces really what you see the same level of prices that you're having at a purely price fixing. So then you have a marketplace, and the question would then, given a particular structural problem, and that would usually arise in certain reconcentrated markets where there's a high degree of profitability. So you've got the banking, potentially, or telecommunication market. You potentially have a market failure there. Then the question is really how you address it. But you know, it's very consistent to the market dealing with the structural characteristics of those markets. So you have to be careful if it's a rational parallel conduct. I think you're producing uncertain rules and uncertain outcomes if you try to enforce behavior that really force things to act contrary to what was in a rational power system. Really what you have to do is raise the mark failure that's been able to make through your
industry. Can I just follow up? And I think we should stick to your industry and not talk about banks and so on. What criteria do you apply in distinguishing between the two kinds of situations? You have to have criteria. So if two suppliers and services, in the one case, there is what you call unconscious, namely price following. In the other case, there is an understanding. Now, what criteria do you use to draw the line between those two? We need to understand that. Do you use any criteria? Do you discuss that? Do you evaluate? On what basis do you evaluate? Is there any science in this at all? Or is it some stuff? Because if it is some stuff, you see, then there's a danger of influences coming in sideways which determine your attitude. It seems to me, if we can, we should be a bit scientific about it.
Well, I put my competition hat on, my current role is part of the competition authority. And it's very clear the provisions of the particular part of bond protection will clearly within the competition, not covered by the central regulator. But my understanding of that text of the law is if you are trying to prosecute or deal with collusion and the section of law, you must show a meeting of mind. It's not an explicit agreement.
I beg your pardon, and behaving badly. Yes, sorry, I'm just that last bit.
You must present evidence of an agreement, in the absence of an agreement, concerted practice, that there's an underlying principle of my understanding of market inquiries and the potential to compensate for loss is to deal with those situations where you have rational parallel conduct producing quote unquote solution price outcomes. So the distinction really is the standard of evidence that you need to prove either an agreement to terms of section 4 or a conservative tax. The fact of the matter is you do have the outcomes of certain markets where rational parallel conduct is produced super competitive prices. And there really your distinguishing feature is the lack of evidence to show a meeting of the mind. In fact, it's the opposite. Evidence will show that rational self-interest participants in that market, given those circumstances, had led them to follow prices and shadow each other in that manner. And then attacking with that problem then, perhaps through a market inquiry addressing specific rules, this tax termination is a mobile sector. There's no need for explicit agreement between operators to produce really what's an anti competitive outcome. The difficulty is in the price determination, and if it's not brought down in cost or to an appropriate level, you create basically a producer price outcome without the participants actually explicitly agreeing with each other. There's a market failure there that then probably appropriate to address to an ex-ante price control, specific price control, which addresses that market failure. So, in a sense, you have the absence of competition. And really, in those very severe cases, and I think that's the thing behind an ex-ante approach, you're really looking at price control. My understanding is that it has been best practice that sector regulation focus on, and really, ex-ante has a very narrow focus. Market failure of that kind in imposing ex-ante price control
algorithms. If I can also add, when you look at chapter 10 of the ETA, it sets out a roadmap through which we should be putting the dog issues of competition. One, we start by defining the different markets. So we will segregate all the markets there are in the oil market. And once you've done it, you then go do your S&P verification, which is where you look for operators with significant market power or dominant companies. So you started by defining the market, and now you go to each and every market to check first which the operators are dominant in the market. But then you realize that the being dominant may not necessarily mean that you are uncool. So then you have to subject those firms that are found to be dominant to another competition test to check whether that market is competitive. Because you may have a dominant firm, but still find that there is some form of competition going on in that particular market. If you find that there is a dominant firm, that makes the market to be uncompetitive, that's when you impose them, like in price changes, where, for example, say that the firm in that non-competitive market to charge cost based on the one of the limits. We also built in the requirement that the transition between such operators should be in transparent and non-competitive limits. So there is a very change that has been outlined in the chapter 10 of the meeting that we are currently reviewing. And it proves how that process that you are able to defend areas where they are volume competition and then impose pro-competitive limits with you over a period of time. So when we have the agreement around the review, they find the new test. Some feel that it should be 18 months, other think that it should be 36 months, you know, when you review on the object that is the areas where they saw in competition in order to impose pro-competitive limits.
Thank you. Before you come in, Farida, you talk about some form of competition, meaning that it's a very little competition. I don't know. when you talk about sector regulation. But I want to bring you to this argument that says, in a situation like South Africa, a developing country, one of our presenters talked about the black, not the previously disadvantaged people. How do you deal with the competition among the first and the second economy as the sector regulator? How do you deal with that? Because most of these other firms are dominant firms, what are causing all those others. Now, how do you deal with the smaller if you seem to be saying the sector regulators are focusing on the price control, you can just clarify that for me. If I give them.
Chairperson, thank you. There are a number of things that we do to address the issues of the competition and the interest of the smaller operators. One way of doing this is through, I have already indicated that we impose pro-competitive measures on the big ones. So by saying that a bigger operator, in the case of the technology and should charge a costly price, then that helps to absorb the operators in a way because they are not charged with the dividends in fees when they interconnect with the business. There is a discussion currently at the CAFA around what we call alpha emissions regulation. At the extent to which CAFA can create a separate dispensation or preferential dispensation for the smaller companies. And that issue is being discussed in consultation with the smaller operators as well as the bigger operators. Whether we need to, beyond the issue of the of imposing limits on the big ones in order to give the small ones access, whether we need to go beyond that, and that is matter is other things in consideration through our consultative process. Madam Chair, let me also indicate that all the players in our industry are required to contribute 0.2% to the Universal Service and Access Fund. That is the 0.2% of their total revenue to the Universal Service and Access Fund. That funding is used to support the DC and SME want to run a small telephone or called the telephone line network. They can apply for that funding, get access to that funding in order to run so there are five subsidies. These subsidies will also be extended to cover all the schools that we define in the Act. And recently, the same money was used to support what we used to call underserved in area licenses. These were district units in telcos that were licensed by CASA. So there is a role within that seeks to ensure that there is play in the industry.
I must admit that we want to actually avoid duplication of functions of regulators and functionaries. So you have admitted that you are engaged with CPI and others, but I want to get some clarity with regard to the revision of the MOU, looking at the revision of the MOU, and also some changes in the book, actual book amendments. Maybe we could hear that. In terms of specific regulatory framework, we've heard NERSA and yourself, and I think we get the impression that we have to have synergy with regard to those institutions and commissions. And those pieces of legislation need to actually have a clear mandate so that the people that are going to use the regulators and others must have a clear vision as to where they're going to launch their company. Is that what I'm getting? So I want to know the actual thing that the vision of the MOU, I know you have some joy with the DCI and others, and that will be something that you look at. But what I would maybe want to suggest is that if you could come with clear, specific indicators in terms of the actual wording, that would help us very quickly, because then you'll see exactly where the need is, and that will be quite easy for us to pick up where the gaps are. But we can see clearly after hearing that there needs to be a tremendous synergy so that the users of the post do not have to go from pillar to post, or maybe go to all the posts and everybody's doing the same job for the same end. So that we need to avoid. But I think that would be, there's a clear message we're getting, I must say. Thank
you, Comrade Chair. I would like to agree with actually, this is some conflict that might happen in the city, which can be addressed by the memorandum of understanding. If there are five things that we indicate, for us it will be best if you give an example of that type of conflict that might not be solved by you sitting down with the commission and trying to solve the problem. That would make sense to me. But if maybe you just want to hold on to your task, because what makes sense to me is there might just be somebody who checks the competition the overall competition activity. That would make sense to me, and you need to convince me. Or there must not be anybody who has the last one. And if I don't understand that, then it's very difficult for me, or when we expect to have inadequate people. So anything gritty wouldn't make any sense. And one other question. A Congress chairperson asked a question, and I don't think answer was adequate. She was talking about the barrier to entry, not having to subsidize a BEE. Barrier to entry, how do I get in there and compete equal? From Shuruwan, where I come from, the bank, I don't have any collateral, I don't have anything. So all you can do is to give me a subsidy to have a tele whatever at the corner, very far, where I will never challenge you at any scale. So the question is, how do we get, that is how I understood the question. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think that's the very important question. Now, talking to the question about the I think we have stated time, but we accept and support the role of the commission. And they have been instances where the two agencies that work together are commissioning the commission and the commission. But all what we say, we have a new legislation which allows the customer to set some. So this is simply about rules. Then after you have settled, logic says that you enforce the compliance. So we're saying that in so far as that is concerned,
then the separateness that should deal with the competition matters are satisfied. However, on matters that are not covered in the legislation that governs separateness, that the macro issue should be dealt with by the competition committee. So in other words, we can say that we will deal with our micro issue in a very narrow sense, confined to our business. But the macro issue pertaining to competition that are not confined to central sector will be dealt with by the competition commission. So the way one can argue that the competition commission continue to play a very big role, but that it looks at the macro conceptual issues, while sector regulations that are confined to the policies, they focus on. Now, in terms of the memorandum of amendment, it could be a pragmatic issue as to where you resolve this issue. We have made a pragmatic submission to the DCI, indicating that ordinarily we would prefer that the amendment, now that it is a comment, help us provide that clarity in the text. But if, obviously, no one could see everything changed in the law, the detail then would be articulated in the memorandum of amendment. So, all what we want this amendment to do is to appreciate that we deal with the sector regulators will deal with micro issues confined to what they do, set rules and what rules, and any other competition method, then will have to be addressed by the competition committee. So you can almost see that from our side, there is not appreciation of the role of the competition committee, even in the community. We have accepted that many a time in the committee. Now, on the issue of complaint, when the complaint goes, we're saying that if the carter says to a particular operator, has caused this crisis, and that operator does not, the carter then should be able to report that we have given you this obligation, and you're not complaining on this obligation. Therefore, we have to report. That's how the role of the carter goes. Lastly, around the issue of the barrier to entry, we're discussing this issue, as we indicated that the law is failing to only change in the only specific measures late in 2006. So such issues are under concern, and unfortunately or fortunately, we have to do everything in consultation with the industry and other interested stakeholders. There are various propositions that have been placed to ensure that there is some form of discrimination that allows new operators to get into the system. And I think it may be, as time goes on, we may come back to the committee to deal with such issues as to how far it has moved with regard to competition issues. Currently, every other matter related to competition, in our preview, is still under consideration. But we can come back to the committee to inform the committee on how far the issues have been turned out.
Yeah, thank you very much,
Mr.
Thank you very much. I think we have come to the end of our meeting. Now, to all the presenters, thank you very much for your presentation. The committee is obliged to look into all the documents presented to yesterday and today, and those that were sent to the committee by other entities and individuals. And this will help us to enable us to come out with a bill that will have a positive impact, especially on consumers. the bill that will be good for development and economic growth of the country. Now, the department is going to respond on Tuesday at 9. We hope that everything will be sorted out. We want to close all the gaps. Because we have realized that there are gaps. Everybody is protecting his or her living corner. Now, we want to close all those gaps so that the harmonious living nation. I still have a feeling that if time allows us, we need to deal with this matter in a way that will have an outcome that will save this country forward. And that cannot be done speedily. We need to apply our minds fully and try to come up with a good effort. I still have a feeling that we need to do. There are many issues that we need to address together. But let's wait for the department to reply on this, so that when we sit down as a committee, we know where to start, what to do, and what to correct. We have listened to each and every one of you. We can now work because we have many ideas and views from different entities that has presented to us during the course of this week. I think we have come to the end of this meeting. Thank you very much and have a safe journey.
Yeah.
You walk. I'm going back to this.